All right, we're back with another interview episode. And this one is different, man. This is different than any other episode we've ever done. It's kind of a special situation. This is going to be a first for the Forfeit Fatherhood podcast. My guest today is Gigi Denard. Gigi is a lot of things, right? She's a speaker, an author. She's a CEO of Well-Fed Resources. Through motivational speaking, publications, and online courses, she offers products and services that help you achieve what she calls the 360-degree wellness in spirit, soul, body, and business. The reason I have Gigi on is actually because of what she does in the realm of fatherhood, which is interesting, right? A woman in fatherhood space, but we father women, don't we? We father daughters, and so that relationship is important. So Gigi's area of expertise is the father-child relationship. Debuted as a voice in the fatherlessness movement in 2012 after publishing her first edition of Hungry for Wholeness, which is a call to pursue healing and restoration in your father-child relationship, and serving as the opening key speaker in an inaugural Father Shift Conference. It's a big deal, right? I'm excited to talk to Gigi today. I'm interested to hear more about her book, more about what she's got going on. I'm excited to hear about what she can bring to the table in terms of father, child relationship. I understand that the book has some stories from her life, stories from some other people's lives, and then just kind of some insight on how we can connect as fathers physically with our fathers spiritually. So I'm excited for you guys to hear this one. And I look forward to, hearing you guys' reviews on this particular podcast. Again, this is the first for us. So let's see how it goes. Don't
move. Keep it locked. You already know. You're listening to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast. And we're having conversations with dope dads covering the four pillars of fatherhood. We call it the Fit Fatherhood Formula. Faith, family, finance, and fitness. That's right. These dads are setting the pace in business and fatherhood. This show isn't only about the outside success. We're getting down to who you are. Gentlemen, it's time to get fit. And now, let's get into the show. Let's get into the show. Let's get into the show.
All right. Welcome back to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast, a podcast for fathers by fathers. Where we talk about the four pillars of fatherhood, which are faith, family, finance, and fitness. And today is a historic day in the Forfeit Fatherhood podcast world. This is a first, fellas. So grab your seatbelts, get your popcorn, because this is the first time that we've had a non-father on the podcast. And not only a non-father, but a female guest today. And I'm excited because it's nice for us as fathers. I mean, it's really cool when we get to hear each other talking about fatherhood, but to hear it from the perspective of someone who has been fathered and has in the fatherhood space, I think is really cool for us to get that perspective. So my guest today is Gigi Michelle Denard, and I'm excited to have her on because she's been doing this fatherhood work just as long as I've been a father, if not longer. So I'm really excited to hear what she's got going on. Gigi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great today, Rod. Thank you so much for being here. It's really exciting. I love the opportunity to make history with you guys today, and I look forward to the conversation we're going to have for your audience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I've done a little bit of research on who you are, what you've got going on, but why don't you share for the listeners, what you've got going on and kind of a little bit about who you are?
Okay. So I am a speaker and author, and in this particular area, I've written a book called Hungry for Wholeness that was born actually out of my own absent father experience. I didn't meet my father until I was 17, and that began my own healing journey. And then found out decades later that God had something else in mind, that he was going to actually help redeem the pain in that experience and bring it to life and ministry to others who have fathers, sons, daughters, all of that. And so I do a workshop to help people jumpstart that healing experience. But I've now been in this space since 2012 when I first launched the book, because the need is so great. And I agree that it's great. It's certainly imperative to have the father's perspective, but I think more fathers who also understand their daughter's perspective, as well as their wife's perspective, helps round out that whole fathering experience.
I'm a girl dad, so I've got two daughters, so I'm definitely always interested in hearing, the fathered experience and the experience of being fathered. Yeah. So let's kind of go into your story a little bit. So you didn't meet your father until you're 17. You had never met him before then.
Correct. Had never met him before then.
Did you have any other father figures in your life, like a stepfather or anybody like that?
No stepfather. I did have a grandfather.
Okay.
With whom I was pretty close as a child, but we didn't like live in the same house or even the same city.
Okay.
So nobody like local that was a daily kind of influence or weekly influence. I saw my grandparents during the summers and holidays.
Okay.
But I didn't have that kind of as a regular.
Oh, wow. So how was that like growing up with, cause my father was around, he was there fully, and then my parents split up. And so he was there when he was allowed to be there. And now, we've got a great relationship, but there was periods of time where I didn't see him. So I know what that was like for me. But I can't imagine, going from, being a baby essentially to almost being an adult and never getting that opportunity to interact or learn or see where I was getting my stuff from. How was that for
you? It was a big deal. It was a huge void. So let me just share a little bit. So I had a peculiar situation of one. So I'm with my mom, right? I look so much like my mother that when I was a teenager, people thought we were twins. People confused me for her like constantly. I mean, really badly, like ridiculously looked like her, except I'm almost nothing like her. So for me, it was so frustrating and weird. It was like, this makes no sense. It makes no sense that I could look this much like this person, yet be nothing like this person. And I didn't have anything to fill in those blanks. So I actually created a story. I mean, this is kind of how kids cope, right? They're in a situation, it's not comfortable, it doesn't make sense to them. So they try to reason out like what could be going on here. So I actually created a story. So my mom was one of seven. I was extremely close to her youngest sister, Marion, who I also looked a lot alike, right? So my thought was, I know what happened. Marion got pregnant out of wedlock and she had me because we were a lot more alike, right?
Okay.
So I thought, okay, she's really my mom. And they gave her to her sister because she had gotten married, right? And that's kind of how that worked, right? I figured there had to be some other explanation.
Wow.
So that was the one I created in my mind. Yeah.
Okay.
Just to show you what kids kind of do to construct something that really makes them feel whole.
Yeah, that's interesting. How old were you when you started to put that story together?
I think that probably like 10, 11, 12-ish.
Wow.
Just kind of like there's got to be that, another reason.
Right. Right in that identity, kind of change where you're going from like a child to that adolescent, preteen.
Yeah, adolescence. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're
and
trying
you
to,
want
it's what I would
to
call
fit,
an identity crisis.
I was definitely having an identity crisis.
Okay.
And I didn't have enough pieces about my father to fill in anything. Now, my mother never spoke negatively of him. And when up until I was 10, every once in a while, I would do something like some kind of mannerism or behavior. And she would look at me, pause, and just kind of shake her head and say, that is so weird. Your father does that. Right. Like something like that. So I obviously didn't learn it from him, but some mannerism that I ended up with, right? And so that was kind of, just those, there were moments like that just every once in a while from about, as far as I can remember, until about age 10. But at age 10, I came home one day, asked a question, think in hindsight, probably my mom was just having a rough day, but she snapped at me. And I read that as this is not a topic that she wishes to discuss. So at that point, I stopped asking questions. I just stopped. So there's this void I can't fill. One of the ways it showed up in elementary school was I would, I knew that my dad's last name was different than what my mom used for me. Like when I went to school, she got me a social security card. She didn't use the name on my birth certificate. She used her maiden name.
Okay.
Partially because I had an older brother with a different father and she wanted us all using the same name. And I found that out later when I asked. But I knew my dad's last name, so I would doodle it. I remember like vividly during classes, you know, I would doodle my dad's name because I was thinking about him like all the time, wondering. And I really feel like I knew inside me, even though I didn't know him, that I was very definitely a daddy's girl. Like wow. I knew it. Yeah. And so it was very like, I couldn't wait until that could be realized, having no idea when that would be realized.
Wow.
So, you know, the combination of not knowing and the combination of sort of another oddity sort of in my household is that after I met my father, I knew this for sure, but it was somewhat evident. My mother was not like the nurturing type so much. She was very authoritarian, extremely. So it was kind of like a female military household with no military exposure. And I was a really sensitive kid, right? Still pretty emotional type. And that really bothered her because I would like cry and she was not really into that you know, kind of thing. So all of that was going on like at the same time. So the lack of acceptance and affirmation from that father figure led me into dating guys that were significantly older. I'm talking like 7 to 14 years older.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of how that showed up.
Okay.
That need showed up, right? And I'll segue a little bit to how I got connected. So when I was 14, okay, so my mom's other sister, Barbara, was married to my father's first cousin.
Okay.
And they actually kind of grew up in the same household, right? So that's how my mom met my dad. She accompanied her sister to like their grandfather's funeral or something somewhere in Delaware. And so her sister, she went with her sister to Delaware and my dad was at this funeral and that's how they met. That's where they met.
Okay.
And they pretty much kind of had no relationship. I mean, they met there. They liked each other. They wrote letters. They just wrote letters. My mom was in Florida. My dad was in Delaware. They wrote letters. Then she went back to Delaware, New Jersey for his ordination. She came back. They wrote letters. The next time she saw him was when he came to Florida for the wedding.
Okay.
So this whole relationship was done on paper, pretty much.
Oh, wow.
Probably.
I can see that being problematic. I can see that not.
You can see that being problematic, right? Yeah. So it happens that I'm a honeymoon baby.
Okay.
My dad actually knew before my mom knew. He said he was absolutely certain that she was pregnant. So he laid his hands on her stomach and dedicated me to the Lord. So I'm also a Samuel child, so to speak.
Okay.
From the womb. And then she found out she was pregnant and she left him at 6 months pregnant.
Wow. So let me pause. I got questions now. Well, I had questions.
Okay.
Okay. So I guess first, now that you say that, why did she decide to leave?
Well, we're still waiting for an answer to that. And they're both deceased, so I'm not going to really probably get that answer. I asked all the initial things like, did he cheat on you? No. Did he hit you? No. Did he steal from you? No. Somebody want to explain this to me? Not really, you know. And I tried getting answers from both of them after I met him, even. I was like, what happened? And still no real sense of that, other than in hindsight, I can say that they most definitely were unequally yoked.
Okay.
spiritually, and I think that was a problem. I mean, they were both believers, but in very different places and spaces.
Okay. Okay.
And that definitely ended up being an issue.
Okay. So maybe she was like, this isn't going to work. And just, you know, let me cut my
losses. That's a good possibility.
Cut my losses now before we get kind too far down the line.
That could have happened.
Okay.
Because that's now, also, I think she forbade him to see me all those years. So, and I asked about that too. And it was because she didn't want the back and forth thing and the pull me, you know, push me, pull you experience for me.
Okay. That was going to be my next question is, okay, if he was, you know, he dedicated you and he was sure that he was going to be a father, then what happened for those 17 years? Where was he? Or what was going on?
Yeah, he tried actually to find us several times. And nobody would, my mom had a very strong personality, not just with me at home, but with everybody. And so even his cousin, you know, he would say like, where are they? You know, I really want to see my daughter. And his cousin was like, dude, I'm not getting in that. I am not messing with her. I'm not, I'm out. I'm sorry.
They didn't want no smoke. That's what happened. No problems with mom.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, and I guess
so
and
that's two, what times,
yeah. Times were different, right? It wasn't as easy to find people like it is now, right?
Correct.
Like
I can
pretty much find anybody with a few
Google.
Hours.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay. I can see that.
Yeah.
Man. Okay. So I guess we can fast forward now. You're 17. How does that meeting happen? Like what was the process?
So that's where I was going to go back to 14. Okay. So that started kind of at 14 when I was sitting at my aunt's house, the one who's married to my dad's first cousin. Right.
Right.
And we were just having just a random, I mean, totally random conversation. I'm hanging out. Her son and I are very close here. We're like a year and a half apart and we were really tight. He was more like my little brother and I'm just hanging out over there. But I always had these random thoughts. So I came up and I said, you know, I always wanted a brother named Ricky and a brother named Mickey. And her face just like blanches. I'm like, what was that? And then she says, well, you do have a brother named Ricky and you have a sister named Mickey.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of freaked us all out, you know. Because I never heard of these people.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa. Yeah. Yeah. That was a wow moment. So she decided that day that she was going to introduce me to my dad's side of the family because my cousin and I shared people. Right.
Right. Right.
So she called my father's father, who we call Daddy Ed. She called my paternal grandfather and introduced us by phone. So we had this clandestine relationship for 3 years. Nobody knew about it but me, Daddy Ed.
Okay.
Anytime I would visit her, she would call him and I would get to talk to him on the phone.
Wow, that's really cool.
Right. That was cool. Right? So then I decided, so kind of in my mind, kind of a strategist, in my mind, I was like, okay, so somehow or other, this is going to lead to my dad. I just know it's got it, right? So I was 16 and going and in my senior year, and I was at the very beginning, senior year, I said, you know, is it okay if I invite my father to my high school graduation, like really fast? And she kind of paused and she was like, I don't care if you can find him. So my plan that I executed was I'm going to send my father's invitation to my grandfather and have him forward it. Now, what did never came up in this conversation with my grandfather was that he and my dad were not speaking.
Ah, okay.
I didn't know that part. That's a whole another story, right? So, but he did forward it anyway.
Yeah.
So he forwarded it and he sent me $100 bill. So, you know, he was all right with me. For my graduation. It was the first one of those I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And my dad got the invitation. So this is really crazy. My father, we were living in Fort Lauderdale, Florida at the time. My father had just spoken in Miami the night before. He doesn't know we're in Fort Lauderdale. Of course, I don't know. He's in Miami. He gets back home to Georgia and finds the invitation the night before my graduation.
Oh, wow.
So he called. And that's where it began. So he calls. I pick up the phone. The apartment's flooded with people my brother had graduated from Florida State like the day before, and everybody, so we'd all been up there. We all came back down to South Florida, my graduation, right? And so like everybody's in the apartment and the phone rings and I'm thinking, oh my God, please. I think I've talked to everybody, really. Or they're here, you know. I answer the phone and this man, whose voice I don't recognize, says, may I please speak to Kay or Gigi? Kay was my mother's name. And I said, oh, this is Gigi, but I'm thinking, I don't know who this guy is. And he says, this is Mr. Deadweiler. It's my dad's last name. And I know it's not my my grandfather because I've been talking to him, right?
Yeah.
So I know his voice. So I, you know, like now butterflies in my stomach and I'm like, which Mr. Deadweiler? And then there's this pause. And then he very softly, slowly says, this is Bobby. This is your father. So now that I know my dad better, I know he was trying to hold it together.
I was going to say that that had to be a very emotional moment for him. Like, hearing who he, because he doesn't know it's you either. Like, just like you don't know it's him, he doesn't know it's
correct.
You either.
He doesn't know it's me. Right.
And then when you say who it is, I bet like just now I got chills. Like, I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
Being a father has made me softer than any, like, oh man. But yeah, I got a little emotional just now. I can only imagine the flush feeling of like, oh my God, it's my baby. Like for the first time.
Exactly. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I had the same reaction to the point though, that I was completely impotent. I think probably the first and only time in my entire life that I could not speak. Since I have been talking, nothing could come out. Tears are streaming down my face and I have literally no voice. So he's on the other end going, Gigi, Gigi, and I can't answer. So now I start panicking, thinking he's going to hang up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to lose the only connection I've ever had with this man. So you remember those cordless phones, right? This is back in the day. So I grab the phone and I run to find my mom. She's talking to somebody in the living room. She's ignoring me. So I can't speak. So I'm trying to get her attention, like pulling on her, you know. And so she turns around when she sees like I'm crying. She's like, Gigi, what is it? And I just kind of shove the phone at her. And she's like, hello? You know, now she's like worried. And then I hear her say, oh. Yeah, I think she's just a little overwhelmed. And then that's all I remember. I slipped out from underneath her arm. I went and buried myself in the bed and I cried because that's all that I could do at that point.
Yeah.
And what is really crazy is that I have a complete blank slate. Like, I don't remember. And I don't remember my graduation. I don't remember anything about it. I don't remember anything from that moment until he visited that July.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like it just. It's all black.
Man. He's blacked out. Right?
Yep.
I mean, listen, that is a highly emotional moment.
It is
a culmination of many years of feeling like you were something and like else, like you know, like you said, you felt like you were a daddy's girl, but you didn't know your dad. And then finally, like, it all comes together.
And that was crazy.
That was a movie scene you just laid out for us. That was like, that's what I'm like, all right.
Yeah, that was intense. Yeah, it was very intense and deep. And it was one other thing that had happened when I was 13 that kind of pointed me toward how significant his presence would be for me. My mom had been dating a guy I really liked, probably the only guy she dated that I really liked in all those years. He and I had our own relationship. You know, sometimes he would come pick me up. We'd go for a drive. He'd take me and the dog out, you know, take me down the wharf, stuff like that. Had a great relationship. Love this guy. I was 13. I remember this like it was yesterday. He was dropping me back off and saying goodbye at the door, but my mom was at the door and he called me his daughter. And I was enraged. I was enraged and surprised at my rage. Like, you like this guy. Why are you mad? But I was so mad. I actually did not speak to him for a while.
Wow.
Like, I was really, really angry. And I was like, okay, this is even crazy to me. But I could feel it. I mean, it was real. But I really didn't understand it until my first or second semester at college. We had a writing assignment. I do not remember what the assignment was, but I ended up writing a piece about my dad called Shoes Too Empty to Fill. Mm. And in writing the piece, I realized that my anger was because I was not going to give anyone permission to fill that spot until my dad had a chance to fill it himself. Like,
it was
so visceral. I had no idea that I even felt that strongly about that. Because I wasn't talking to anybody about this. So it's all internal.
Right. Man. You know? That, whew. Okay. All right. Let me bring myself back down here for a second.
Okay. Yeah.
So your dad calls about the graduation. Yeah. You black out for a few months.
Right.
And then you officially see him in July. So after graduation, yep, summertime.
Yeah.
He comes to visit. Yep. What's that like?
Okay. So the first part was I was nervous. Because I wasn't sure how my mom would treat him. I was really worried about an interaction that would not be good with them more than anything, quite frankly. And so I was nervous and kind of on edge, like all through dinner. You know, I was like waiting for the shoe to drop. She was nice when he got there. I'm like, okay. And actually, I was asleep when he got there. So what became a trademark of my father was that he was late. Of course, I didn't know that yet, but he was always late. But, you know... But that he was late and I passed out probably just from anxiety. So yes. I fell asleep and then I woke up to a man's voice in the house. So I kind of stumble out from the room. I'm half asleep, don't go wash my face, anything. I just stumble following the voice out. And I get out there and I see this man and I'm like, so this flood of thoughts, you know. One of the things my mom used to say was that you got a Dick Tracy head like your dad in terms of shape. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh yeah, I see that now. I do. You know? And then it's like, oh my God, our eyes are exactly alike. Like exactly alike. Same kind of weird color and everything. And you know, he's walking toward me and I kind of just stopped, just taking in the view. And he went to hug me. I wasn't quite ready yet. So I kind of grabbed his elbows and just stared. You know, it was surreal. It was just so surreal, like in the flesh for real. This man is like right here in front of me. And then we had dinner. After dinner, my mom hung out with us. We talked for a while. And like around 11 o'clock, she goes, okay, well, I'm going to leave you two at it. So far, everything had worked well with her. I was happy. And he and I stayed up and played chess till 4 o'clock and discovered, yes, we both love playing chess. So that was one of the first common things that we discovered about each other, right? We both love playing chess. We stayed up talking, playing chess. The other thing that we discovered was that we wrote alike. Like he brought some of his writing and I read it. I'm like, oh, this is freaky. I could have written this. Stylistically, we wrote so much alike. So that's kind of how the genesis of the book happened. We weren't really trying to write a book. We really were just trying to write our own story, but we thought it would be cool for us to tell our restoration story from both vantage points and like put it together because the writing would flow really well. That was really all we were trying to do at the time. And I think it was healing for both of us.
Yeah.
Because we got a chance to like express all of that.
Okay. Okay. So when you guys meet, you now have or the start of a relationship.
Right.
You're finding out these things about each other that are similar. And then I'm assuming that continues to progress and yes. becomes more of
yes.
a thing.
Yes.
So at what point do you guys decide now let's write a book? Like between, because that's what you're still 17 at that point.
Right.
And then
yeah.
the book comes out in 2012, like
right.
along the way. You're just yeah. experiencing each other and learning each yeah. other and growing to love each other and all these things, right? And so
right.
You're having your father-daughter experience, although later, but you're getting to have
yes.
it.
Yeah.
How do you get to a point where it's like, we should write this book from, you know, at all, even.
Right. Well, it's kind of funny. I actually think it started because we were having a conversation. I don't think that came up until, okay. So we met in, that might have been like 76, I want to say. 79? Oh, gosh. I'm losing track of my age, time, and everything. Maybe 79 is when we met. And so it wasn't until 19 that I really started a deep walk with the Lord.
Oh, that's...
Okay. So he was a minister. So he, I think... When I kind of started walking more deeply with the Lord, he said something at one point, like, I really wish we could minister together. I think it was born out of that kind of conversation. Mm. And then I was said, like, we write so much alike, it would be cool to, like, write our stories and just put it, you know, like, merge them together. Like, I thought that would be, like, cool.
Yes. You know?
So that's really how it began. And that's how it stayed for years. That we wrote our story. It took him a while. You know, I had to keep reminding him, like, you owe me text, you know, and then I put it together in this one piece. Right. And I forget what we called it back then. It was one of those kind of titles, you know, kind of sappy, but, one of those titles that sounded like an R&B song. I don't know, you know, hell no. But what happened was it started getting shared kind of organically. So I was living with, and this is like, wait, you know, from, I would say maybe, I don't think we even got it together until the 90s. It just, okay. You know, it wasn't like, It was something we were doing for us at that point. It really wasn't something to do for the world, right? So it took a long time for us to just get it together. And so then I was managing in Denny's at the time and ended up meeting a woman who was a customer who was in prison ministry. And we just ended up talking because my dad came to faith in prison. So that sparked that conversation. And then I told her about this piece and then she wanted to read it and she read it. She was like, ooh, could I take this and like distribute it at the prisons where I was like, sure, I don't care. You know, I'm sure he would love that, you know, kind of thing, right? And then it wasn't, I think it was actually after my father passed, which was in 1999, somewhere around there. I'm losing track of years. So we lived in this house in Berkeley. I know I was living in Berkeley when he passed. I lived in this house in Berkeley from 1995 to 2000. Okay. So I want to say it might have been 1998 when he passed. And at that point, there was no book. There was no real idea for a book, I don't think, then. But after that, I came back to D.C., visited an old professor of mine. I went to Howard. He had been kind of like a surrogate father to me. He read it, and he was the one who said, you know, if you put some other people's stories, like I got four or five more people's stories, and put that together, he goes, that could be a very powerful book. And he was also a very, like, strong dad, you know, very, very involved in his kids' life and stuff. And so it resonated for him in a lot of ways. And I remember we talked because, yeah, my father had passed and he was talking about the struggles he had when his father passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had this whole, like, conversation about these connections generationally and stuff. And he was like, this would be really powerful. So it was really his idea. And I was just like, huh, you know, it sounded like a good idea,
right?
But it still took like 12 years for it to manifest. And because it wasn't like something, it was like, it was a good idea. But at some point, I think probably around 2010, maybe, I started really feeling like it was a calling.
Yeah.
Like this needed to be written.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, well, that's different then. Now it's an assignment. And so that's when I kind of really began. And it all came together pretty quickly, considering how it's structured. Because I had to do interviews. I had, you know, tons of interviews. I transcribed them all, led them all, you know, then pulled out pieces from that to create the book. And I knew that it was something that the Lord wanted me to do, particularly some of the doors he opened for me to have it reviewed and supported. So when this me, nobody girl writing about this ended up getting the endorsement from Dr. Ken Canfield, after the Lord kind of prompted me to reach out, I was like, that is crazy. That is so crazy. I mean, like, I don't know what I'm doing. He doesn't know me. This is crazy. Like, who does that? Yeah. I did. He did. Even against his, I mean, at first he was like, yeah, I don't really do that. But then he said, but having said that, I really like your writing. And then we ended up in this long conversation, and then he ended up endorsing the book. And that opened up the whole can. So he was the one who then recommended that I be the inaugural speaker at and I was the only woman speaker at the inaugural Fathership Conference in Portland.
You have, you're doing this only woman thing, right?
Like, yeah. Very few women in the space.
Well, that's the from the start of you guys deciding to write it and just writing it for yourselves and it not having a timeline, I think probably, and this is just my guess, is probably allowed it to be a more open, more honest, more real share, as opposed to like if somebody was like, hey, you got to write us a book and you got 6 months to get it done. You know, that time frame, as the story is also being written, you guys are also living the story.
Stuff. Yes.
Yeah. Right. So that adds a whole nother layer to it as well.
Yeah.
And then I agree, getting other perspectives and interviewing other people also adds another like real layer to it. Not that you guys' story isn't enough, but then supporting
other people's experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I had one type of experience, but there's so many out there. And so all of the people that get brought in all had different experiences.
Yeah.
And that was great to be able to share.
But it allows you to resonate on a different level, right? Because if you were only to be fatherless with your own experience, that's one thing.
Right.
But then also see the connections that are made and how it manifested in other people's lives later on down the line, and like, oh man, maybe that's why I do this. Or I never thought about it this way.
Yeah.
Because I only have my perspective, but to see it through other people's eyes as a whole nother beautiful layer to the healing process, I think.
Yes, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. And it certainly made it easier for me to minister to other people at that point. You know what I'm saying? Because now I've had a chance to go through this story with a whole lot of people. Because there were peoples who didn't end up in the book at their choosing. They pulled it. But I had already experienced all of their stories and, stuff. And so had walked through a whole lot with them.
Yeah.
So yes, it did give me a very different sort of perspective at the point that the Lord kind of brought me to a place to start really reaching out to help other people.
Yeah, and I think as you said something too, as you mentioned, is it became an assignment. And it wasn't like before it was like, something you guys were interested in, maybe even a hobby or something cool that you get to do with your dad. And then it becomes like people are interested and then it becomes an assignment. Like this is something that God has put on my heart, a calling, you said. This is something that I have to do. And that also now changes and puts it on a whole nother level. So you write it, you publish it, you get it out, and you get the opportunity to speak at the Fathership Conference. And then from there, like, what's next? What are we doing next?
Well, so what happened was, first of all, that was just an incredible experience. So, I mean, I've always been comfortable speaking, right? I was an orator in high school. I was in the debate team, speaking wasn't the issue. But in this kind of space, the audience was packed out. I mean, they were bringing in chairs into the sanctuary. There were like 400 people in there. 98% of them were women. And like the room was just broken, just crying. Everybody's crying. I was like, I don't even know how I held it together to talk because I could feel it coming back, from the audience to me. And, I don't know if you're familiar with this line from Chariots of Fire, where the guy's running and he says, that when I run, I feel the pleasure of God. And that sentence never kind of made sense to me. until I experienced it. And I did in the middle of that first ministry event. And it was like, oh my God, I knew like, you are born to do this right here.
Yeah.
Like in a way that I never felt about anything else. It was just like, whoa, what's happening? So all these people are like coming up. We pray over people and stuff. And then after that, people are just like coming to me. You know, it was just like, I was supposed to be going to sign books in the lobby. I never made it to the lobby. Books got sold out. I never signed anything because the people who stayed in the sanctuary just crowded around me. People wanted to pray, cry, ask questions, hug, everything, right? So it was like, whoa. Okay, so then I was very aware. I was acutely aware. It's like, okay, people are going to need more than just this kind of opening them up. You know, I felt badly because I felt like, you know, I've opened up this thing and then I don't even have time to like help them, like push this back up. It's just spilling all over the carpet everywhere.
Right.
So from that, then I created the workshop. So when I came back 4 years later, I did the inaugural, the opening presentation, but I also did a workshop that Saturday. So now I can actually help you more.
Go back.
You know, I can help you walk through some things to help get you on this journey, you know, and not just leave you hanging and crying in the, you know, in the aisle.
Yes.
Because that was hard. That was hard for me to watch. And I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't know it was going to happen like that. You know, I didn't know what the impact would be. And so so that's really kind of the core ministry is this Jumpstart workshop program to help people walk through some things to get you started. Healing is a journey. It is not an event.
Yeah.
And so no amount of one time is going to get it for anybody, but I can get you started. I can help you understand what the pieces are you're going to have to kind of keep revisiting. And I actually also have since created a 12-week companion diary to follow up. So you have kind of a guided walkthrough for the next 12 weeks afterwards, so you can kind of keep doing the work.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the workshop, is that like a 1 day event?
It's actually 2.5 hours.
Oh, okay.
It's 2.5 hours. It's very intense, you know?
Yeah.
So longer is not necessarily better.
Right, yeah.
So it begins with our talking about recognizing both how our Father experience has impacted us, kind of an assessment, a self-awareness assessment, because a lot of times people don't understand and connect the dots from their father wounds to their behaviors and stuff and attitudes. And so we kind of walk through that. And we also help them sort of recognize what type of father they had. I look at 5 archetypes, the absent father, the abusive father, the authoritarian father, the apathetic father, and the accusing father. And you may have any kind of mix match among those, but kind of help them locate. So we have kind of like a baseline and also understand exactly kind of what we're dealing with up front. I mean, after we go through a few exercises around that so that they individually kind of know where they are, then we move to the hardest part, which is step 2, which is repent and release. So that spends a lot of time talking about why all the resentment, anger, bitterness, hurt, and other stuff that you're carrying around this is not healthy for you. And why you've got to get through this part to get to the healing in the wholeness piece. And talk about how much forgiveness is not about what you feel, it's about a decision you make. And so we go through exercises to help people release and let go, at least by decision, some things. Anger and resentment and hurt, but it's painful, and I know it is. You know, it's like, tell everybody, bring your tissue with you. It's, you know, some of this is gonna hurt, it's gonna be all right. Yeah. You know, and then we take a break after that because that's usually draining.
Yeah,
take a little 15-minute break and then we come back. And the last part is restorative, so it's about receiving God's love, receiving a renewed identity. Understanding that you have intrinsic value because you've already been made in the image of God. You have intrinsic value because there's a purpose and a plan for your life. And as you continue to walk out this healing and wholeness, you will be able to fulfill that because you won't be carrying around all this hurt and woundedness and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I do to help people get going.
Yeah, that's awesome because, you know, it's funny. I recently posted something on Instagram and it was just like a voiceover video, just kind of talking about things your father, like trying to understand your father. So basically, he's like, things he did and why he did them, right? And there's, you know, as always, it's Instagram, right? So the comment section is the comment section. I don't, you know, it is what it is. But there's mixed, there's a very, like, there's very separate answers on this one or in terms of replies. Like, there's a lot of like, yeah, this is exactly my dad and this is who I try to be. And then there's a whole lot of, you don't know my dad. My dad was never there. My dad was this. And there's like a lot of pain.
Yes.
Because this is a 27 second video. Like I don't know you. You don't know me. Like I'm not. Right. I didn't say your dad's name. I didn't say you. But there is a lot of anger and pain and frustration in the comments, and that just being able to heal from that and move forward.
Yes,
I think that's like the pebble in the boot of all of these, and it's men and women. It's not like it's just guys or just the majority of my followers are men, but it's women in the comments too. They're like found like it was to hear those things and to hear a father in that particular video talk about some of the sacrifices that they made and some of the things that they do and having the opportunity to tell their child why they did it. Was like, never, my dad would never do that. Like, dang, I feel bad, right? Mm-hmm. When I post something like that and I can see how it affects people, because I'm not posting it for that reason. You know, I'm posting it. I'm posting it because I know it resonates with guys who are making those sacrifices and are doing those things for their kids. And I feel the same way. And maybe someday if something happens to me, my kids will look at my Instagram and see, oh, dad felt that way, right? Mm-hmm. But like when it does that to people, where it's like you mentioned, it's like opening them up, or it's like opening up a bag of chips and taking one chip out and then leaving the bag open for the rest to go stale. Like I feel bad, and I'm like, but I can't. Yeah. I don't know what to do for them. And I'm glad that you recognize that and created the workshop and the journal that goes along with it, because there are a lot of people who are suffering from father wounds that don't have a resource or just don't even have any idea that that's what it is. You know, as guys, we man up and we tough it out and we push forward and we act like it doesn't faze us. And then we show up in the world in ways that are less favorable and maybe in ways that we don't want to. And we don't know why, and we won't connect to it because we can't be emotional. So I appreciate you doing what you do. Are your workshops, are they virtual or is it in person?
I mean, I have done them in person as well, but
even better.
Yeah, they're virtual. Yeah,
even better. So there's no excuse for you guys that are listening that you know are dealing with some of these same situations. There are excuses, but as I've said before, there are reasons is what guys say. It's not an excuse, it's a reason. Yes, there are reasons, but reasons are just excuses with very good lawyers. And you have allowed them to convince you that that it's reasonable. But healing and finding healing and seeking healing and actively taking the action to get it is super important for you and your fatherhood, regardless of what your father did and what that relationship is. You may not be responsible for it. Like you may not have had anything to do with that. Like you were a kid. And so that wasn't your responsibility, but the future, right? The future and what happens next is definitely on you. So I would for sure, like, these are resources that you could take advantage of. And you know, if somebody was interested in the workshop, what would be the best course of action for them to take to try to get? And I normally would wait to the end to ask you this, but because we're talking about it, I don't want to.
Okay, you know. Sure. Yeah, no, my website is the best place. So that is www.wellfedresources.com. And there's a healing tab. And on that tab, you can do it all. You can sign up for the workshop. You can order the books, the workbook, everything.
Okay.
Right there. Yeah.
So that's definitely going to be something for fellas to do. All of that information will also be in the show notes and stuff. as well as on the guest profile. So if you guys are on the website, you can find it there. All right. Sorry. I didn't want to let the moment pass because sure. I know people will, you know, life happens, right? And a lot of guys are sure. listening while they're driving or listening while they're doing something. And, you know, one mm-hmm. thing can happen and they never come back to it. So I want to try to sure. get it now. Okay. So you're doing the workshops. Is how often do you do the workshops?
So they're available three times a week. So I do it as scheduled.
Okay.
So whenever they're booked, I do them. I've done it. I do it for different, because my outreach is global. I do it across different time zones.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
the availability pops up, you know, when you go in to book it, but I just changed the schedule, but there's Sunday evenings, Sunday kind of late evening, and then Monday early evening. And then I believe I shifted it to Tuesday mornings.
Got you.
Wow, man. So you got me emotional early. And so now I'm in my feelings about fatherhood. But so then after your father passed, do you still have any connection to any of his family?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm actually quite close to my oldest brother. So
okay.
there were other siblings before me. So I got okay. to meet that Ricky and Mickey and the others.
Okay.
There were
okay.
many others. So a total, my dad had 9 kids across 3 marriages.
Okay.
And an extra early on in the first. Yeah. He was a very different man, very different place in marriage 1. And
yeah.
I've not met that brother, but I know he exists. And, but I've met my older 3 sisters and my older brother. And I'm mm-hmm. very close to my oldest brother. He lives in Delaware. So we do get okay. to see each other from time to time.
Okay.
But we stay in touch, you know, a lot more probably than me and anybody else. But I, you know, I am in touch with the others, you know, around holidays, stuff like that. And then I had 2 younger brothers, one of whom unfortunately passed just last year before his 55th birthday in a tragic accident. And then my youngest brother's like 10 years my junior. So we probably keep in touch more now. I was more in touch with the younger brother for a season. But yeah, what I do have some connection to that side of my family. It's different. You know, it's kind of different I met them when I was 19, right?
Yeah.
So we don't have any of those like historical, like, oh, we always do this together. You know, any of that kind of stuff. And I think we've all made efforts to connect, but there's just difference.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't have that kind of history, you know,
yeah.
kind of thing, it's a different kind of thing to work out those relationships. My oldest brother and I have discovered some, you know, funny overlaps. He has definitely grown into our dad physically. I mean, he's always looked a lot like him, but now it's kind of freaky. I mean, sometimes I'll be sitting in front of him talking to him, and he'll turn his head a certain way, and in that instant, it is like my father is sitting in front of me, and I'm just like, oh, okay, you know, don't do that, you know, kind of thing. And we have some interesting quirks that are alike, you know, weird things we have discovered along the way, you know, we were talking one day, we tend to not like sweets as much. We're talking about, you know, our bad go-to is French fries. We both feel the same way. Like, you know, if I'm going to cheat, I want French fries, you know, kind of thing. But when there are sweet things, like it was weird, like early on, it was the fall and we were just talking on the phone and we were talking about how good we'd been. And then came the pumpkin donut. And he was like, yeah, me too. That's the only thing, you know, it's like the pumpkin. I don't even like pumpkin otherwise. But when the pumpkin donut comes out, I'm struggling. You know, just weird little quirky stuff like that, you know, that we'll have in common. So that's always cool.
That's why I asked, because there's those parts of him that are in them.
Yes.
And the experiences that they got to have with him and all that kind of stuff. They have like a different insight.
We all have very different experiences. Yeah.
But that gives you like a whole 360 kind of a feel of who. Because if I talk to my sisters about my dad, like they were raised by a completely different person. It's like, you're not even the same guy that raised me, raised them. Even to this day, like the way he is with them, he's very different with me. And the way he is with my kids, he's, you know, he was never like that with me. And so being able to see him in this full picture of a man and of a father is really cool as I get older, because, you know, as a kid or when you're younger, you don't, you know, think about stuff like that.
You've seen all of that.
I'm not even interested in that. I'm just like, can I borrow your car? But now that kind of, as I'm older and he's older, really trying to understand who he was and why he did some of the things he did and does some of the things that he does. And it's helpful for me to talk to my sisters about it because, like I said, they lived with him. I didn't. And so they got to experience him on a daily basis. And so some of the things that I think are true, or they're like, what? No, never.
Right.
He never did that. Like, where'd you get that from?
Right.
I seen him do it. Like, nah.
No. Right.
And vice versa, right? The way that I think he was, he wasn't with them. And it's really cool to hear that.
Yeah.
Because I formed my own perception of who he is.
Sure. Of course.
And I put him in a box, and this is who he is. And like to hear them talk differently about him, it's like, oh man. All right, my bad, Dad.
I will confess and admit that I think I definitely have the most idealistic version. both by nature and by my experience.
Yeah.
I found out some things about him that were fairly disturbing that happened with the third set, you know, in their household that never happened with my mom or me. Right. And so I was like, really, you know, and they, you know, my younger brother and I had this long conversation a few years ago where he just kind of really opened up because he had a lot of questions because I kind of just appeared for them, you know, when I was 19, they were kind of like, well, you know, who are you and why are you here? You know, kind of thing. My younger brother took to me right away, which I thought was kind of funny because he also is the other one that has the exact same eyes as me and my dad.
Okay.
And then my baby brother was more afraid. He kind of hid when we met. And so it took a long time for me to kind of develop a relationship with him. But I mean, in hindsight, I understand a lot of things that at 19, I did not understand. You know, I began to understand how it could have been, you know, fearful to feel like they were going to get replaced. And so a lot of that was going on in that period. And because my dad, I was the one that sort of got away, so to speak, you know, like he never had access to, he also kind of idealized me. So when I went to the house the first time, you know, and there were periods that I had some friction with my older brothers and sisters. And I was kind of like, why? What have I done to you? Right. And I couldn't get it. But when I went to his house, both he and daddy had did the same thing, sort of enshrined me, which created like
some tension,
resentment. Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely created some tension. And so I go to my dad's house and he's got like a picture of all the kids, like up on this mantle, except for me, he's got this whole like presentation. Seriously. You know, you got 9 children and you got me in the middle with all this stuff around it. I'm like, no wonder they don't like me. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I was like, what in the world? You know, but I also understand it differently now than I did then. I understand his own void, you know? That I still didn't really get at 19. I mean, I heard him, you know, and he talked about how, you know, sometimes when we first met, it was hard because he, you know, kind of treat me like I was 7 or 8. And I'd be like, okay, hold up, dude, you know.
Yeah.
We ain't going all the way back there, you know, but he would like, it's hard, you know, he would honestly say, this is just so hard for me because I missed all of that.
Yeah.
You know, I never got to have you sit on my knee, you know, and tell you these things, you know, kind of thing. No, I'm sure you already know this by now. It's like, yeah, I can cross the street by myself, you know, it's okay now, you know. But I also, you know, understood that, you know, that was a process for him to have to start trying to parent me at 17, you know, and just like, what the heck? And how much he'd missed and just what a longing he'd had you know, that came up in the writing. He had missed me as much as I'd missed him, if not more. You know, and so just trying to squeeze all of that back out, you know, or trying to like put toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that was hard. That was hard for him.
Okay. Man. Yeah. You know what? If there were ever a first, this was a great one. Right.
This is
really good because again, it's a unique perspective. It's a story that resonates with a lot of people. Well, I mean, it had a happy ending, mm-hmm. or a happier ending, than a lot of people, sure. a lot of guys get, or a lot of ladies get, you know, sure. they never meet yes. their yeah. biological father, or they meet him and they don't want a relationship at all.
Right.
It definitely doesn't culminate into a book and a calling and a ministry. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
This is like one of those almost best case scenarios, you know,
yes,
to from where it started to where it is now.
Sure.
And so I really appreciate being able to share that with the listeners and for you sharing that with me, because it again gives me another perspective in fatherhood, just another tool in the tool belt. Like, mm-hmm, I don't know that mm-hmm. I'm ever going to have to use any of it, but I like to have it. You know what mm-hmm, I mean? Like, mm-hmm, I go to Home sure. Depot and I don't necessarily need a circular saw, but man, they got some really good looking circular saws over here. Right. Like, I might have it here. I don't know mm-hmm. if I'm going to ever need that, but mm-hmm. man, that looks really cool. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those for me. And I really appreciate you doing that. And
sure.
for taking the assignment and going all the way with it, because you could have definitely been like, I don't know, it's just for me and my dad, and you know, I don't really want to.
Yeah.
That's not my thing. Yeah. I'm not really trying yeah. to do that.
But it was kind of funny. I kind of, after I wrote the book, I was kind of like, okay, I was obedient, wrote the book. What's next? You know, I yeah. did not see it progressing. You know, I still didn't kind of get it yet.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, we're doing more than the book. Oh, I missed that little footnote. Sorry.
But being an obedient and willing vessel, you know, God will use you in the ways that he needs to and wants to. And you just have to be obedient. And I appreciate you for that.
Yield it. Thank you so much.
I got a couple questions for you. And these are the same questions I always ask, but I got to ask them a little differently. I'll ask them the same, but the way the answer is going to come out, I think it's going to be a little bit differently.
Okay.
So obviously we talked about fatherhood and fatherlessness and rekindling and you know, creating healing and all of those things. But it being a fatherhood podcast, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, what does fatherhood mean to you?
Gee, I think that more than anything, fatherhood is the honor of pouring in. The honor of pouring into your child. Faith and love and hope and affirmation and expectations and joy and, you know, the richness of relationship.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Because I don't think that we think of it that way that often. Mm-hmm. You know, we think shepherding, or we think protecting, mm-hmm. we think providing. But that P is not one that we think about. That pouring in part of it is not one that we think about often. And it is that in so many ways.
In so many ways.
And so many things that we do, or who we are, how we act, how we show up, or all ways that we are pouring in, or should be, could be pouring in to our children and to our community, you know, to the people around us. Yes. Because our kids are going to leave our home someday, and what we've poured into them, they will go out and pour into others. And if we let them leave with an empty cup, then have we fathered them? Have we fathered them correctly? I like that. I really like mm-hmm. that. You know, I watched Black Panther the other day, and it was the scene where T'Challa and T'Chaka, and he's talking about, and T'Challa's like, I don't think that I'm ready for you to leave me. Mm-hmm. And he says to him, the role of a father is to prepare his son for the day he won't be around. Have I failed you? Mm-hmm. And you just now saying pouring in is just that part connected for me, because if I'm not pouring into my children, when I'm not around, they won't be prepared.
Correct.
And so, yeah, that's awesome, man. Dang. See, you just, man. All right.
Okay.
All right. So here's another question for you. And you knocked that one out of the park. If you had a message, and you kind of already do this, but I guess just specifically for the podcast now, if you had a message that you wanted all fathers to hear, what would that message
be? I think the most important thing for your listeners would be that there is a model for fatherhood. It can only be as effective as your ability to embrace and mimic God's father heart towards your children.
Okay, well, wait a minute now. So now we gotta lean into that. Okay, what are we talking about when we say God's father heart?
To me, even though the title of the section is usually called the prodigal son, I think for me that story resonates most about the father. That father's heart toward his children is, I think, the best representation in, you know, just natural human form that we see in the Bible about God's father heart, because there is so much hope and expectation and anticipation, even in that child that goes astray. That father was eagerly waiting, it says, eagerly waiting on the edge of his seat, runs out to meet the child, not just to, you know, I think a lot of times we have this paradigm of fatherhood and protection and discipline and stuff like that, but it's that heart of you belong to me. And because of that, everything that I have is yours.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Just looking at that story in a different lens through the father's lens, and even thinking about it right now, is like, you're absolutely right. Because you allow your child to go out into the world and you have hopes and dreams and aspirations and you want them to be the best. And, but all the while they're out there, if it doesn't go right, you got a place, right? And you come back and we'll be here open arms, and I'm going to love on you and nurture you and care for you and help you, you know, heal you from your wounds. And then, you know, when you're ready, we'll go back out into the world. But just know that I'm here to support you, to encourage you, to hold you accountable sometimes.
That's right.
But also just to love you no matter what happens. Yeah. I'm gonna have to start thinking about that. When somebody mentions a prodigal son, I'm just in my head, I'm like, it's about dad, man. That's about dad. It's all right. You call it what you want to, but but I know. All right.
Exactly.
All right. And then now this one is a little different. I guess I have to ask you a little differently. For those of us that are out here that experienced fatherlessness or are still experiencing fatherlessness, or have a father wound that we are trying to heal or trying to heal from, what would you say to them?
I would say prioritize it because it's having more impact on the way that you show up in every relationship, whether it's personal, whether it's at work, whether it's with your kids or other people's kids. It's having an impact. And so prioritize that healing journey so that you can show up as a whole man and a whole father.
I love it. I love it. Hungry for wholeness, right? We gotta have a hunger and a thirst and a want to be whole, and not just accepting of the partial father or man that we are. We want to be the full thing, right? All right. Well, look, Gigi, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on to the podcast and share your story, to share all of the things that you are doing to help heal us as people, right? Because I know it's men and women that are needing to heal from father wounds, but then also to give fathers a perspective on what that is or what it looks like from the other side when we aren't maybe showing up the way that we should completely. If we're not as present in our child's life, even being in the home, And not being present is a shade of fatherlessness, right? Like if you live at the house with your dad and he's always at work, or when he's home, he's not engaged or he's not present. Correct. You are basically living at home without him anyway. So I appreciate you sharing, you know, your journey and your story from the side of the child, because we get biased in our opinions for sure.
Yeah.
I appreciate you coming on. If guys are wanting, and we already got this earlier, but just in case they missed it, if you know, the people that are listening want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, definitely my website's the best. So that's www.wellfed, and there's a healing tab, and that will take you to what you need there. So the workshop, okay. You can register for the workshop directly there. You can order the books, there are links to order the book and or the companion diary that goes with the workshop straight from that page.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for joining us.
We'll
have to have you back on at some point to talk about this a little bit deeper, because I feel like now that we've opened up the bag, so to speak, we peeled off the Band-Aid, there's going to be more conversation around this topic that needs to be had. And why not have an expert come back and talk about it?
Thank you so much.
So if you're open to it, I'll be reaching out. Okay. All right. Cool.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Very, very much so.
All right. You guys heard that now. So if Gigi is like, no, I can't make it, I'm going to play this back for her.
No, I will definitely find time here. I really appreciate, you know, I can hear your heart, you know, through all of this. And it is just so, that warms my heart. I'm just like, you know, fathers that are pursuing fatherhood with everything they got, that is so rich and so needed and so valuable. And thank you for sharing that heart with all these listeners.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to let you go you can enjoy the rest of your day. Hopefully you get a little bit more sun. it breaks to the clouds. It's starting to out here. So I gotta go do some yard work. So I'm not super excited about that, but you have a blessed day, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
You just tuned into another episode of the For Fit Fatherhood podcast. Thank you once again for listening. If you haven't already, go ahead and follow me at You Can Call Me Coach on Instagram. Also follow the podcast at For Fit Fatherhood, the number 4 and the letter U on You Can Call Me Coach. Go ahead and flip over to the next episode, man. I know you love this one, so you'll probably love the next one. Excited for you guys to hear it.